In Syria, activists say at least 9 people were killed today in the city of Homs, a place some now call the capital of the revolution. The often lethal pattern of protest and crackdown began last spring, and the UN reports more than 2,000 people have been killed over that time. The United States and some European governments have called for President Bashar al-Assad to step down, and the leadership in Damascus grows ever more isolated. Recep Tayyip Erdogan, the prime minister of Syria's neighbor and formerly close ally, Turkey, has denounced what he calls savagery. In a moment, Syria's ambassador to the United States, Imad Mustafa, will join us. If you have questions for the Syrian ambassador, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. You can join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Ambassador Imad Mustafa joins us here today in Studio 3A, and thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Also with us is Michelle Kellerman, NPR diplomatic correspondent. Michelle, nice to have you back with
us, too. Nice to be here.
And Mr. Ambassador, your government has been waging war against its own people for more than 6 months now. Can you tell us when that's going to stop?
Well, absolutely, this is a false premise. This is totally untrue. What is happening in Syria is that extreme fundamentalist Muslims are waging a war of insurgency. They have committed atrocities and extreme violence, and it's the duty of any government in the whole world, including that of the United States, towards its citizens, peaceful citizens, to protect them. The war in Syria is a war between the Syrian army and the Syrian police and militant, heavily armed insurgents who have committed atrocities and continue to commit atrocities right now as we talk, particularly in Homs.
These are not the accounts that we get from what sources are available. One problem we have is that independent sources, reporters, are not allowed into Syria to cover this for themselves. Would Syria allow reporters in to see these?
It's untrue. We did allow reporters time and again into Syria, including some of the NPR, Brazilian, Indian, Southern African, Russian, and Chinese reporters are there, and they do report from Syria. A totally different, absolutely different story from the story that is reported here, usually in the United States and the American media. It's extraordinary how facts are distorted. Let me tell you this. Are there political demands in Syria? Of course they are. What does the Syrian government think of them? We believe they are legitimate. How did we address them? We agreed to a total comprehensive political uphold of the Syrian political system. Who are those guys who are carrying arms and committing crimes and atrocities and attacking both civilians and government officials? They are people that have no political agendas whatsoever related to democracy or freedom or reforms. They have their own extremist, benighted, medieval ideology, and this is the sort of ideology they are trying to impose on Syria.
Michelle Kellerman, we've invited you to help us out with some questions, too. Michelle?
Well, I do want to hear a little bit about what your job is like here, because over the summer, the State Department called you into to the State Department amid reports that the embassy, that your staff was spying on Syrian dissidents, harassing dissidents. What did you tell the State Department about that?
Of course, when they invited me to this meeting, I challenged them. I told them, if you have a single shred of evidence that this has happened, please provide it to me. Give me a single incident in which this has happened. And of course, they did not provide a single shred of evidence or a simple story or anything to substantiate those preposterous, ridiculous allegations. Let me tell you this. We have 600,000 Syrians, expatriates, living here in the United States. My embassy is a very small embassy. I have 4 diplomats. Do you expect 4 diplomats plus the ambassador to threaten and to spy on 600,000 Syrians across the United States, from California to New Jersey? I think this is preposterous and ridiculous. This is on one hand. On the other hand, it's been totally the other way around. Whenever there was a demonstration in front of my embassy, whether it was opposition or loyalists, because the Syrian community here, as it is in Syria, is divided. Many people are very loyal to the government. Many are opposed. Most of those who are opposed carry Islamic agendas with them. Yet I have been very respectful. I met with them in my office. I offered them coffee and water. We conducted a very civilized dialogue, and I can give you their names and you can contact them to verify my story. And those are opposition. And I have sent multiple messages to the Syrian community here in the United States, reminding them that even when we disagree politically, we do need to remember that we all belong to Syria, to one country, and we should always transcend our political differences and remember that what unites us is far more than what drives us apart.
One person from the embassy did leave. I wonder if there have been others, you know, because we learned a lot at the beginning of the conflict in Libya. Many diplomats defected from Muammar Gaddafi. Why has not been the case?
Yet another story to be added to the plethora of untrue stories. Nobody from the embassy left, not a single diplomat. The guy you are referring to, my assistant and my friend, Ahmed Salqini, who is not a diplomat. He's a local employee. He is a personal friend of mine. I cherish my relationship with him. He moved to another job. Now, here is a big surprise to you. I personally helped him obtain the other job because he's a very young man, and as it is the case with every young person, he needs to promote his professional career, and he moved to a better-paying job with a Syrian person, by the way, who is also a friend of mine.
We're talking with Imad Mustafa, Syria's ambassador to the United States. Also with us, Michelle Kellerman, NPR diplomatic correspondent. Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. And we'll start with Hazim. Hazim with us from Philadelphia.
Yes. I have a question for the ambassador. My brother, Dr. Sahal Halak, he came to visit the United States. He was a very highly educated physician. He came here to attend a meeting. After he went back to Syria, he had signed a petition to allow physicians to treat injured in the demonstrations. Then he was kidnapped and killed. And I was wondering, he's a secular, high-profile physician. He's not an armed gang. What would they do that if he claims they're killing armed gangs?
Hazim, you say he was kidnapped and killed by the government?
Yes, by the Mukhabarat.
The secret police. Go ahead, please. Yeah.
Look, this is unfortunate, and I don't want to spend my time discrediting preposterous, silly stories. Your brother is a highly respected doctor from Aleppo. Not a single demonstration took place in Aleppo. He has never involved himself in politics. He is highly respected, and there is no proof whatsoever that the government has even harassed him, not to say kidnapped and killed him. This is an absolutely false accusation, and you can add it to the plethora of false accusations. The fact that he was murdered in Aleppo has nothing to do whatsoever with the insurgency
that's the
in Syria.
You guys having. That's what all what you say. You deny everything. We have actually picture from Colonel. We got it secretly of him. You know, we have also information. Also, you guys kidnapped him. You told his wife he was released the next day. You told his wife he was released the next day. On Thursday, his friend has went and visited him over there. It's been investigated by Amnesty International, and you have to say that now he was not kidnapped and killed by you.
Hazim, I can't speak.
I think this is a very good example and a very good evidence of what's happening about Syria. People call news agencies here in the West and other human rights organizations, and they give them blatantly either exaggerated or totally, absolutely untrue stories. Here is an example. A group of terrorists will attack a military barrack. A fire exchange will ensue. 3-4 military people will be killed. 6-7 insurgents will be killed. People like the gentleman will immediately call Amnesty International and say, today, 11 people were killed in Syria. Look, in Syria, every single demonstration, without a single exception, and this is my challenge, started from a mosque. Not a single demonstration started from a university. Not a single demonstration front started from a professional syndicate or group or union. Not a single Not a single demonstration started from major cities like Damascus and Aleppo. Those are the leaders of the insurgency in Syria. You're what you call the leaders for freedom and democracy in Syria. This is a radio station. I know you cannot see the pictures, but I welcome you. I welcome everyone to Google these pictures. These are the guys who are calling for what they call a revolution of freedom and democracy in Syria. You are repeating exactly what you did in Afghanistan when you supported the Mujahideen and you used to call them freedom fighters, and then you discovered what sort of people you were dealing with.
We're talking, Hazim, thank you for the phone call. We're sorry for you.
Can I ask one more question?
I'm afraid we have to give somebody else a chance, Hazim, okay. But we're sorry for the loss of your brother. Thank you very much for the phone call. This is a tweet we got from Chucky in Idaho. Is the military only to defend the Assad regime? Is it time for Syrian elections for a new leadership and direction?
Absolutely not. The military is defending the Syrian civil society against, as I have said, extremists who are extremely violent. By the way, they do not only kill, they don't only shoot. After they shoot and they kill. And I can provide you with hundreds of videotapes of what they are very proud of, what they have done. They mutilate the bodies, they cleave the bodies in the most horrible criminal way. And yet, it is the duty of the Syrian army, as it is the duty of the U.S. Army, to uphold law and order in any Syrian country, in any town, I mean, and in any city.
We're talking with Imad Mustafa, Syria's ambassador to the United States. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Michelle?
Well, I was wondering, we talk about that they're terrorists, but how do you explain then the many children that have been killed in this conflict and the high number of people, 2,200, according to the United Nations?
Well, of course, casualties have fallen. Many of them are innocent casualties, and the state does recognize that there should be accountability for any fallen person. One of the first massacres that took place was against a Syrian army colonel who was driving his two kids and his nephew to a school. They were ambushed and all four were massacred and their bodies were dismembered. What I'm trying to tell you is it is very ugly what is happening, but the reality is so distorted. Now let me move back to your question, because I think this is an important question. What's going on the political scene in Syria? As I have said in the beginning, let me give you some details right now. The Syrian government has announced a major political uphaul and reform of the political scene in Syria, something unprecedented in the whole Arab world. Syria has always enjoyed freedom for women and freedom for religious groups in Syria. This is why the Christian community in Syria fully supports the president of Syria and also most of the minorities, as well as the intellectuals and the liberal Sunnis in Syria. I am not denying the fact that also a large sector of religious people oppose the government in Syria. I am recognizing this fact. But we have announced a new multi-party law. We have announced a new freedom of media law. We have announced elections that will take place, free elections, multi-party elections that will take place next February. And we will continue to move on. But we will never allow those extremist groups to take over Syria. Syria is not Kabul. Syria is not Kandahar.
Let's get another caller in. This is Michael, and Michael with us from Cape Coral in Florida.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to ask the ambassador, given the events that have taken place in Egypt as well as in Libya, how would he explain the alienation of Syria within the Muslim world, and at what point in the revolt would he consider seeking political asylum in the United States?
I'm a very proud Syrian. The only place I will live in and I would like my children to live in is Syria. I hope you know a little bit more about my country, our civilization and our history and our cultural heritage before you decide that I should leave my country that I'm very proud of. This is as far as the second part of your question is concerned. As far as the first part of your question, Syria is a very proud secular place. As I have said, those Arab countries that criticize us, they don't even allow women to drive cars. They don't have constitutions, they don't have political parties, they don't have the cultural diversity that Syria enjoys, and yet they believe that they can lecture us. So it's not about whether Syria is alienated or not with other Islamic countries. The question is that the overwhelming majority of the Syrian people do not want for Syria to fall under the prey of extremist, violent, fundamentalist groups. We will not allow this, and Syria will keep on moving forward. Yes, we have not done a good job. I can easily recognize this on political reforms in the past, but we have committed ourselves to absolutely transparent elections. Let the elections decide who should rule Syria, neither the armed groups nor the other alienated, as you describe them, Muslim nations.
We just have a minute or so left with you. It's not just the Islamic countries. There are Turkey, a secular country, yes, an Islamist party in command, but not exactly Iran by any stretch of the imagination, a multi-party state. Turkey, Syria's most important neighbor, its most important economic trading partner, and the prime minister is denouncing what he calls savagery in your country.
Well, you have described the political scene in Turkey, and let me tell you this fact. Only 2 days ago, a large parliamentarian group from Turkey, from the opposition party, the People's Party, came and visited Syria. They are siding with Syria, and they are being very critical for the Erdogan party for his interference in Syrian affairs. So even the Turks are divided vis-a-vis Syria. Let me be honest and frank with you. Of course, we are being severely criticized by a rainbow of Islamic parties and groups. But once again, I don't believe those groups are the ones who should tell Syria how to move forward. It's the Syrian people.
But this is also the UN Human Rights Council, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, many people coming forward now and saying
I agree with you. There is an incredible campaign against Syria, but we do have friends. Brazil, South Africa, India, Russia, and China are standing fast with Syria. They understand the sort of pressures we are facing because of our positions.
And I'm afraid we're going to have to end it there. But, Mr. Ambassador, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Ambassador Imad Mustafa of Syria joined us here in Studio 3A, along with NPR diplomatic correspondent Michelle Kellerman. Thank you all for your tweets and your phone calls. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.